The Red Sox are bringing back Mitch Moreland to play first base. But that's not the really big news. What Red Sox GM Dave Dombrowski does next will be the most important thing. The hot stove is finally turned on. It's Tuesday, December 19th. I'm Joe Sullivan in for Chris Gasper. Welcome to Season Ticket. Joining us via Skype is the Globe's Red Sox beat writer, Peter Abraham. Pete, welcome to Season Ticket.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm well, Pete. How about yourself?
Well, we're finally getting some action on the Red Sox. All of this time since the end of the season, and they finally made a transaction, their first one.
All right, so they signed Mitch Moreland to a two-year deal for, $13
million? Yep.
And so what are your initial thoughts on that deal?
Well, my initial thoughts are that Dave Dombrowski, until yesterday, had no leverage in his negotiations with Scott Boras for J.D. Martinez, because everybody knew that the Red Sox had to do something to help their offense, even if it was just in a small way, and they hadn't done anything to that point. So Scott Boras had all the leverage. He controlled the clients that the Red Sox needed to get, and there wasn't much Dombrowski could do except argue with him over the length of contract without really anything else that he could use to try to make his point. Now that he has Mitch Moreland, who theoretically could be a guy who could play, if not every day, at least against right-handers, every time the opposition starts a righty, the Red Sox do have a little bit of leverage and can say to J.D. Martinez, hey, listen, we'd love to have you, but we don't need to have you. And a lot of people would say, well, how can you say that about Mitch Moreland? You know, he's certainly not as good as Eric Hosmer. I looked at some numbers this morning. Over the last 3 years, Mitch Moreland has one fewer home runs and six fewer doubles than Eric Hosmer does at the same period of time. Now, Hosmer is overall a better player, higher batting average, higher on-base percentage, all that stuff. But when you consider that they'll get Moreland for $6.5 million a year and Hosmer would have cost them in the neighborhood of $28 to $30 million a year, it certainly looks like a good deal for the Red Sox, assuming they go on to do something else.
Well, and he fields, what about if Moreland's a tremendous fielder, right?
Yeah, both of those guys are. And I think there's a lot of debate about how good exactly Hosmer is, but there's really not much debate about Moreland. He's, for what the Red Sox do with the shifting and their infield, Moreland was a very good fit last year. And the other thing about Moreland that Red Sox fans have probably forgotten, because it's been a while now, he played much of the second half with a broken toe on his foot. And that hampered himself. That hampered him offensively tremendously. He was off to a great start in the first couple months of the season, much better than anybody expected, before he hurt his toe. And that really shut him down until September in terms of his effectiveness. If he can stay healthy, if they can spot him the right way, not put him in there against lefties, he could be a pretty effective player for them.
And broken toes, there's nothing you can do. You just have to either play
right.
or sit out. They just heal
taped,
on their
own. He taped
own.
It up. Yeah, he taped it up and played. And he gutted through it. And a lot of his teammates admired that he did that. He never really took a lot of time off. He played a position where, you know, obviously in the infield and with the throws to first base, he was probably hit on it a few times and it aggravated him. And he never complained about it. He never wanted to talk about it. And I think the Red Sox feel like, sure, you know, Mitch Moreland's not a guy you want to hit fourth. And he's certainly no J.D. Martinez. But this is a good player who can add to their lineup and give them a much deeper team.
So, Pete, the way you were talking about money there, it's like Dave Dombrowski was signing a free agent on Cyber Monday or something like that. Why the emphasis on cost savings in your
well,
thoughts?
I think it's more, Moreland was not going to be somebody who was going to, no matter who he signed with, it was not going to be somebody who was going to cost a lot of money. And once Carlos Santana went to the Phillies, Moreland became part of that second tier of free agents who can play first base, along with guys like say Logan Morrison or Lucas Duda. And the Red Sox felt more comfortable with Moreland than they would have somebody trying to maybe go after somebody like Hosmer, who a lot of people thought would be a good fit in Boston. And I still think he would have been a good fit in Boston, but obviously not at that price. Now, the Red Sox theoretically could Mitch Moreland at first base, have Hanley Ramirez DH, and go play baseball. But I think there's still moves to be made, and I think this gives them a chance to go back to J.D. Martinez and reset the boundaries of their negotiation and perhaps get something done.
So can we talk about Scott Boras for a second?
Sure.
Doesn't he strike you as like he could be like an evil assassin or something in a movie, the way he conducts himself? It just is... It's incredible his demeanor and how he lords over baseball.
Yeah, well,
go ahead.
As somebody in my job, Joe, I appreciate that. I think it's good if you're looking at the off season trying to come up with ways to write interesting stories. I think Boras is a good guy to write about because he does inspire a lot of ire among the fans. He's a guy who inspires a lot of passion. And in this particular free agent market, he's the guy who controls everything. He's got so many of the better players. He's a guy who likes to wait and get the best deal for his players. And I kind of have a stock response to fans who send me emails and say, oh, this guy is terrible, and this is what a terrible thing for baseball. And I said, well, if your son was the number one pick of the draft and had a chance to sign with a team, who would you want representing him? And most people, you know, will email back and say, well, you're right. If I was the one involved in all of this money, I'd probably want Scott Boras on my side too. And the thing is, he's doing what, you know, you don't hire Scott Boras unless you want to get a really good contract. It's no coincidence J.D. Martinez hired him right before he became a free agent. And it's no coincidence that all of these good players, most of the good players have him as an agent because they want to get the best deal. And you can look at it this way. If it wasn't the player getting that money, it would be the owners getting to keep the money. So if you're rooting against Scott Boras, you're essentially rooting for the billionaires to keep more money.
So are you saying ticket prices won't go down if they save money? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't think ticket prices are really affected as much by the players that are acquired. I think it's they're impacted more by the market and whether a team has been successful or not. I don't think the Red Sox or any team looks at it and says, well, if we raise ticket prices, we can afford J.D. Martinez. I don't think there's much of a correlation to that.
I got to tell you about a reader I get emails from occasionally, and he tells me he thinks Nick Cafardo's on Scott Boras' payroll because he writes about him so much.
Well, you can't help but write about him. I mean,
he's not on his payroll, right?
if he is, he should be driving a nicer car or something, I would think.
But I think you make the point. Scott Boras does make things interesting, and that's why. And he represents many of the best players in baseball, and that's why Nick writes about him a lot. That's why you write about him a lot at this time of year.
Yeah, so he's doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, that's what he's supposed to do.
So Carlos Santana, great guitar player, pretty good baseball player. I'm talking about the one that signed with the Phillies the other day. So what was the Red Sox situation with them?
He was he was a guy in sort of that due diligence with. They checked him out. They made him, I don't know if they made him an offer, but they at least discussed the parameters of an offer with him. He was somebody that they met with, at least his agent, and tried to see what was there to be done. And he ended up going to the Phillies, which was a very big surprise. The Phillies were not a team people expected would be signing one of the free agent sluggers this year. But like a lot of teams, they've changed their direction and are trying to make some hay now with a new manager. So it was an interesting decision, I think, for a lot of teams that he ended up going to the Phillies. People thought that he would either stay with Cleveland or go to a contending team. And he was a guy, and obviously looking back on it, we now know the Red Sox were more focused on Moreland. But when you look at Santana and compare him to Moreland, again, they're probably more similar than you think. And obviously Moreland is much cheaper.
There you go again, Pete. You're all about saving the money.
Well, I think it's for something that's coming, whether it's J.D. Martinez. It could be a contract extension for Mookie Betts. At some point, they're going to have to look into extending Chris Sale or Craig Kimbrell. This is not going to be the end of the offseason for the Red Sox. I think there's more coming.
Well, I think Red Sox fans hope that's true. So let's talk about J.D. Martinez, who's the free agent who, what did he hit, 45 homers last year in Arizona?
He used to play with the Tigers.
What's that?
He was a tremendous force for Arizona last year.
So how do you look at him? How do you see him as a player?
Yeah, you know, he's such an interesting story because he was released by the Houston Astros at a time the Houston Astros were rebuilding. And Martinez, to that point, had revamped his swing and done a lot of work on the way he approached hitting and became a terrific player. And an unexpected one of those guys who kind of comes out of nowhere in the middle of his career to do what he did and became one of the premier power hitters in the league. And it's one of those, he's never been a guy who's had a huge contract. And this is a chance for him at the age of 30 to really cash in. And I'm sure Scott Boras, comparing him to his other clients of the same age and the same accomplishments, would love to get him a 7-year contract. Now, I don't know that he's going to get a 7-year contract. But when you look at what he's done since 2014, only Giancarlo Stanton and Mike Trout have a higher slugging percentage in baseball in that time. And at a time when a lot of teams in the game, including the Red Sox, are trying to get that power, J.D. Martinez brings the ability to do that as a free agent, so you don't have to make a trade. The fact that he was traded last year means you don't have to give up a draft pick to get him as part of the CBA. So there's a lot of things on his side when you're looking at free agents.
And it, would he be a DH if they signed him now and kept the rest of the team intact?
Well, I think for this particular Red Sox team, he would be. There's been some talk that he would prefer to be an outfielder. I asked Boris that directly. I said, is that a priority for him? And he said, well, he would adapt to whatever team that he went to. That's not necessarily a priority. Now, the Red Sox could give him occasional games in the outfield for certain. You know, their three outfielders would not obviously start every single game. The interesting part of it would be, at this point, if the Red Sox were to sign him, say the Red Sox signed him later this afternoon through a six-year contract, what would you do with Hanley Ramirez at that point? Would you keep him around? Would you release him and just take the hit on a $22 million?
Hey, Pete, I would hold that thought. Let's get back to that. We're going to take a short break here. More Hot Stove Talk with Pete Abraham coming up after the break. And we will discuss what this means for Hanley Ramirez. Stay with us. Welcome back. Season Ticket is now available on Spotify. So if you want to listen to us, just search for us and hit follow. Of course, you can always subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Now back with Peter Abraham, and let's talk about Hanley Ramirez, Pete. This Moreland signing affects him. If they were to sign J.D. Martinez and Moreland, they sign Moreland, and if they sign J.D. Martinez, what happens to Hanley Ramirez?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where he would fit on the team at that point, because obviously for whatever they would pay J.D. Martinez, he's not going to be a platoon player. They're going to want him to be the DH or play the outfield as many games as they can get. And Hanley Ramirez could play first base against lefties. That was one of the things they planned to do last year that never really came to fruition. But the DH at-bats wouldn't be there. And is it worth having a player on the roster who makes $22 million to do that?
No. And the answer is no, right, Pete?
No. Sure. And the other thing that really complicates the whole thing with Hanley Ramirez is he needs 497 plate appearances to guarantee his salary in 2019 at $22 million. And if he gets to that number, you know, the Red Sox owe him $22 million. So a case can be made, and I made this case on December 10th in a column that I wrote, that they should release Hanley Ramirez, that they would be better off releasing him now to make sure that his contract option does not vest, and that they should move on from him and give those at-bats to other players. And I mentioned at the time J.D. Martinez. So whether the Red Sox would get to that point and release him, I don't know. I'm sure they'd love to trade him, but I don't see any teams out there willing to take on a one-dimensional player for that kind of money, $22 million. So these next week, maybe 10 days, are going to be interesting, because the Red Sox will have some difficult decisions to make. But ultimately, what could be best for their team and best for their new manager would be to release Hanley Ramirez and try to move forward with J.D. Martinez, if they could do that.
And they'd have to eat the $22 million for this year if they released him, correct?
Correct. And obviously, any team that were to pick up his contract, which I don't know that any team would be responsible for that option. But if the Red Sox just flat-out released him, they could avoid being responsible for that option.
Do you think Dave Dombrowski shares your thoughts about Hanley Ramirez? I mean, it's interesting what you think, Pete, but what it's most important is what Dombrowski thinks.
Yeah, well, at this time of the year, you have to weigh what executives say carefully, because what they say is very usually carefully worded so that they don't give you too much of an indication of what they think. And when asked about Hanley Ramirez at the winter meetings, the Red Sox were effusive in their praise that they certainly feel he could play first base, even though he hasn't done that for 2 years. They certainly feel he could be the DH. They feel like he's going to have a big bounce-back season after having some minor shoulder surgery right after the season. Alex Cora professed nothing but, you know, admiration for him and confidence that he could work with Hanley, which hasn't been the case for every manager he's ever had. So it sounded to me a lot like some of the nice things the Red Sox said about other players before they traded him. So you have to kind of look at what they say and kind of wonder, is this something that they're sending out to try to, whether it's to an agent, whether it's to another team, whether it's to the player himself, or is it actually what they think? And in some cases, I think Dombrowski legitimately believes some of the things that he says when he says, I only want to sign, you know, one big bat. I never believed the idea that they wanted to sign both Hosmer and J.D. Martinez, and obviously that was true. But the Hanley stuff is very tricky, because you really can't make a case that they'd be better off without him.
So not even Tampa or some other team wouldn't want him? I mean, if Arizona loses J.D. Martinez, they wouldn't want him?
I think it's the same way that what happened with Pablo Sandoval. Nobody wanted the contract. but the second that he cleared waivers and became a free agent, and then the Red Sox would be responsible for that money, then sure, teams were willing to sign Pablo Sandoval, and the Giants did. I think if the Red Sox were picking up the freight, a team like Tampa Bay would probably be interested in Hanley. Maybe the Baltimore Orioles would be. Maybe the Kansas City Royals would be. Mm-hmm. There are teams out there that would be interested, but only if the Red Sox were picking up the bulk of that contract, which they would have to do.
So let's talk about Manny Machado now. The Orioles are going to trade him, right? Dan Duquette seems determined to trade him.
It sounds like it, and it would be really an historic trade because there haven't been many players of his abilities who have been traded at this point in their careers. He's still a very young guy.
Well, Pete, some listeners may not know all the things you know about. Tell the listeners how good he is. And he plays third base for the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, he is a historically important player at this point in his career. When you look at some of the things that he's been able to do, this is a guy who's going to go into next season at the age of 25. You know, so he's still a very young player to be 1 year away from free agency. He's been a shortstop his entire career, but has played third base primarily in the major leagues and been very good at it. He has a career OPS of 805, which has been pretty impressive, 138 home runs. He's a guy who can steal bases. He hits a lot of doubles. An excellent defensive player. For a guy who hadn't been a third baseman until he got in the big leagues, he's won two gold gloves at that position. And when you consider the fact that he's only 25, you can make a case that he could get even better, which is not usually what happens with a free agent. Usually you're paying for previous accomplishments when you sign a free agent. With Machado, you could be paying for future accomplishments that might be even better. So he's an interesting player because of his age, because of his ability. And he could be on the market at the same time as, you know, Bryce Harper. And that makes it, you know, it'll be a frenzy for those guys next year at this time. So he's a guy, any team, I think, because he could play third, because he could play short, any team out there could use a guy like Manny Machado right now.
I had a friend of mine who's a big Red Sox fan say to me when we talked about Machado, he said, any three Red Sox. I'd trade any three Red Sox for him. Is a bit crazy, but what is it even possible to trade for him for the Red Sox? Is it possible?
Sure. If the Red Sox said, we'll give you Andrew Benintendi and any two pitching prospects that you want, I'm sure the Orioles would do that in a second. But the problem with Manny Machado is it's great to say you should do anything you have to do to get Manny Machado. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Baltimore is not going to give the team that trades for him a 72-hour window to sign him. Duquette has been on record many times saying that they don't want to do that. And if you're Machado and you're a year away from free agency, I don't know that there's a great benefit to signing now. You would think you'd want to get into the market. You've gone this far. You're a year away. Very few players like that, when they get this close to free agency, give up the ability to do that. So you're putting a lot on the board. If you trade a lot for Manny Machado, you might only have him for 1 year. And that's a lot of risk because I'm trying to think of Andrew Benintendi has five more years of control. You'd be giving up a lot of years of good players to get 1 year of Manny Machado. And at some point, that outweighs what you could get out of 1 year.
Who's his agent, Scott Boras?
In fact, it's not.
That could change, though, right, between now and next year?
Yeah, well, I would guess not. He's represented by Dan Lozano, who's a very good agent. He's been around a long time. And I'm sure probably has security guards walking the perimeter of Manny Machado's house to make sure Scott Boras isn't sneaking in.
So what else? Who else could the Sox be pursuing? What are we missing here? I mean, we keep talking about J.D. Martinez almost exclusively. Is there anyone else who could fill that role we're going to call it? Slugger in the middle of the lineup? Will we call it that?
Yeah, middle of the order hitter is the term that they use. I don't think that there's a free agent, obviously, that represents, you know, what J.D. Martinez does. Any other free agent would be a lesser player. Now, a lesser player could well be fine, but there's nobody like Martinez. The one thing that we're missing is the idea that they could make a trade, that they could put together something, whether it was, say, Jackie Bradley Jr., a couple of their prospects, other guys on the major league roster who they have depth at that particular position. They have a number of guys who look like utility players. Teams are always looking for guys like that. They could probably put a package together and bring back a middle-of-the-order hitter from another team. Now, who that would be is uncertain. There's usually those players are not the kind of players that teams want to trade. So that's the one sort of X factor with Dave Dombrowski is he likes to make trades. He's a guy who's not afraid to make deals like some GMs are. So if he gets to a point where he just thinks J.D. Martinez is too expensive for too many years, he could turn the other way and make a trade to bring in his cleanup hitter.
So something's going to happen soon with the Red Sox. I can't imagine Dombrowski not doing anything, right?
I agree with you. I don't think what we see right now is the team that we're going to see walking onto the field on spring training on February 14th. I think you're going to see at least a few changes to what we have right now.
So you know what that means, Pete? It means you're going to have to come back on Season Ticket and talk more about this when it happens. Thank you so much for today.
Joe, I was hoping that we would engage in exciting college basketball talk, but I guess we're going to stick with baseball.
We want people to listen to the podcast, Pete.
Well, it was very nice to be on with you, Joe. Thank you.
Folks, you can find Peter Abraham on Twitter, at Pete Abe. Thanks for joining us, Pete.
All right, Joe. Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. If you've enjoyed the show, please tell a friend and leave us a review. I'm Joe Sullivan in for Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.